Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Behind the Collective podcast, where we share the real stories of those working across the agriculture sector. This episode is part of the TLC and AWI Partner Program. The program is about connecting and supporting WA wool growers. Today's guests, Jess and Luke Harding. A dynamic couple who've built a career as shearing contractors and now farmers. It's a great conversation that talks about the lessons they learn as contractors and how they shapes their business and now what they implement in their shed at shearing time. Their love for shearing and shearing competitions and their passion for the wool industry.
So the first question, and I think it's always the hardest, is tell us about yourself, who you are, what you do and where you're from.
All right. I'm Luke Harding. Yeah, we live south of Whitebrook. Yeah, on a farm, we crop 1,300 hectares and have 1,200 ewes plus hogget. So my mate's Marina. Farm with my wife, Jessica, and three kids, Colin, Roland and Cooper.
Awesome. And Jess, what about you? Where are you from? How did you end up there?
Okay, hi, I'm Jess. I met Luke at Cunnan Agricultural College. I came from Quirrating east of Quirrating near Kellerberrin. And yeah, when I met Luke, I navigated south to Boyartbrook and yeah, we've got our own little farm now and yeah, life's happening.
And so I believe you haven't always been farming. So how long have you been down south? Tell us a little bit about how you ended up where you are now.
When I graduated at Cunnan Nag, I worked back there as a technical officer for 18 months, just doing the spraying and cropping, and that was a really good experience. And then after that, I had a crack at mining, which didn't last very long, probably a couple of months. It just wasn't for me. Yeah, and then after that, I was always probably intending to go shearing. I just wanted my body to mature a little bit. And then, I did that for 10, 12 years, not full time, probably only 6 months of the year. And I was farming with my old man, helping him out. From there, through succession in 2017, me and Jess went out on our own. And, obviously some big bills to pay. We were shearing contractors as well. Did that for 5 years and that was, interesting times.
And what about you, Jess? How did you fall into this? You're equally, I believe, into passionate about the wool industry.
I've always been exposed to it coming from like a wheat belt farm where we consisted of both sheep and grain. Just through being at the Ag College and the exposure through Wayne Laird and his sort of passion for the industry. Yeah, and he exposed us to the shearing competitions. And from there, I just really enjoyed them. And then it helps to work in the sheds when you're competing. So, I was in and out of the sheds for a little bit. And then obviously when we got our little farm and had children and that, it sort of went on the back burner a little bit. But, still floated in and out of the shearing competitions with Luke. Just love being in the shearing industry, really.
Yeah, and well, I think Wayne Laird, his name comes up a lot in the Western Australian wool world. I think we have a lot to credit that man when it comes to getting people into the wool industry. And so obviously you guys were both Lairdy's little projects at school. So is it safe to say that he inspired you to get to where you are?
No doubt about it. He did open up passion for me anyway. Just his enthusiasm and he took us along to a first shearing comp at Wagon, way back in 2006 or 2005, I think it might have been, or 06. And it's basically been doing the shows ever since. And a lot to thank him for, really.
I want to delve into how you guys became contractors, but I want to talk about shearing comps. Why are they important for the wool industry and what is it about them you guys love?
The reason I love them is I'm very competitive and basically you can always get better. You can always learn more and, that's the beauty of the shearing competitions. And I think the industry needs them in a way to keep the quality there. I think being a farmer and a shearer, I see both sides, and there can be a real, I think, out there at the moment, there's some quality issues. I think, you know, the shows, you know, show that you can still shear a lot of sheep and do it properly. Yeah, we just need to keep a pride in our work, I think. I think that's lacking in some teams, and it's all just numbers driven. So,
what about you, Jess?
I'm competitive, and I just love bettering myself as such with shows. So, I don't always get to go in the shed today, or I don't get to compete, or, you know, better myself in the shed. I'm that sort of person where I try to always, I don't know, be the best that I can at work or my job or whatever. But shows, at least you can kind of keep pushing yourself to better what you've done previously or what you can improve on. And yeah, just shows are, it's more about growth for me than, but I think the industry does need them. Just to, I don't know, keep you honest, I suppose, in where you're at.
No, that's and you guys have done quite a few competitions. So what's your best piece of advice? We'll start with you, Luke, on competition day. Is there like a secret banana that morning that you know, or like a coffee at a certain time?
Oh, that's interesting. Look, it's funny you ask, because I do have a little ritual where, you know, it starts actually the night before, where, you know, the hand pieces have got to be cleaned down, and then you go through your show combs. And yeah, look, not really. I mean, you know, a few snakes before, you know, if you make the final or something like that, a few lollies or something. But yeah, that's about it, to be honest. Yeah.
And what about you, Jess?
I'm a busy mum of three, so if I get out the door without any too much hassle, then I'm doing well. So
your step count's already at 10,000, and you haven't even started yet. Just getting the kids in the car.
As long as I've got everything packed, like the paddles and the running shoes, I'm pretty good.
No, that's awesome. Now, how did you guys start your shearing contracting team? Like, how did that happen? Because I presume you just don't become a contractor. Tell me about that entire process.
Yeah, okay. So when I finished up at the Ag College and did that little stint of mining, I managed to get into a team locally in Boitbrook. And at the time, it was quite hard actually to get a job. It was when there was a lot of shearers around and the industry was, in a place really. But unfortunately, the bloke that I was working for was not in a good way with, you know, substance abuse. So we actually put a pitch to him. I said, look, mate, like, it's going to either go one or two ways. We can keep going the way we're going and basically lose a good quality local run, or I can pay you out of it and continue this run on. And that's how it eventuated. Look, we're probably too young to do it. And there was a lot of people within the team that were a lot older than me and Jess, and that didn't sit well with some of them. It wasn't easy for us to become bosses overnight. But, yeah, look, there was some good learnings out of that. And
what were some of the biggest lessons you learnt?
It's not an easy job. Being a contractor, you're a psychologist, you're a bank manager, you're a mediator, and you're a boss, and it's not easy. Like, I see it from both sides of the fence now, obviously, being a farmer and a shearer, and a lot of farmers out there think that they're the only farmers that are on the run. But on the flip side of that, I know contractors that have got terrible communication too. So you've just got to realise that you're dealing with farmers' livelihoods, and you're dealing with, you know, people's everyday jobs. So it's not easy being a contractor.
And what about you, Jess? Some of the biggest challenges during that period of, I suppose, becoming contractors?
Definitely realising that you're managing people a lot more than you anticipated. Yeah, you kind of assume that people come to work and do the job that they're employed to do, but it's not always the case. Yeah, sometimes you are navigating them through not only their job but their life as such. And that's sometimes hard when you've got your own personal life as well to deal with. But I suppose, you know, if you're in a good place with your other half or your partner, and, you know, it makes it a little bit more manageable. And with Luke, we've been pretty tight from quite a young age, sharing a lot of experiences together. So I think we did well in the way we conducted ourselves, you know, running a shearing team. It's just, like Luke said, it's not an easy task. And, yeah, it's a big learning curve once you get into that role.
You think about, like, multinational companies, right, who would have, say, a team of 10 people or a team of 20 people. They have a HR department. They have a finance department. They have all of these people. You guys are literally HR. You are literally the finance department, and you are the CEOs. So it makes sense that they are. I think people underestimate the complexities of businesses such this and running people, you know, being in charge of all these people. You know, what did you learn about a team? That's a really great point you've made. You guys were a team, you know, to anyone else, I suppose, out there. And I think in agriculture, it is a lot of, you know, husband and wives or partners as teams. What do you reckon you learned through that time?
Communication. Like, yeah, you just always got to keep communicating, even on the smallest of scales. Yeah, as long as you keep everything open and communicating, then I suppose it makes it a lot easier.
Mm. I think being honest too, you know, like, it's, you know, promising the world and giving an atlas, you really avoid that. Like, you know, if you're 3 weeks behind because of weather or unforeseen circumstances, you just got to be honest. Or, yeah, and likewise with your staff. I think at times, yeah, if I was to do it again, I'd do it a little bit differently. Obviously, being we're quite young, so we were pushed around a fair bit. Yeah, so.
Well, yeah, what would you do differently?
Probably set a few rules. Oh, look, it'd probably be easier to run two teams than one. One, you know, you need to be able to move certain personalities around because, you know, not everyone gets along, and that's, you know, that's life. But, you know, if you do have that flexibility of moving personalities around, you can probably a few less hiccups along the way, I guess. Yeah.
Having managed all of those staff and being shearing contractors, what has it taught you now that you've gone farming?
Probably resilience, really. Yeah. I lost sleep. It wasn't easy. You know, if you couldn't, I don't know, if you're a week late or something like that, you know, I'd lose sleep over that. Or, you know, if someone walked out for some reason that day and we couldn't cut that shed out that day, and, you know, all of a sudden the ripple effect the next day, you couldn't start the next shed in the morning, you have to start at lunchtime, you know, like, it was just, yeah, I don't know, it's just always a challenge, really. And, you know, we got through it. You know, once again, we were communicating, but still it didn't make it any easier.
Mm. What about you, Jess, now that, you know, contractor gone farmer, what would be some of the biggest lessons you got out of that?
Resilience is a big one that Luke said. It's a lot easier managing ourselves on the farm than managing a whole heap of people. And if things go wrong in your day now, it's a little bit more, I say, manageable. It's more self-inflicted, maybe. So you have no one else to blame but yourselves. But whereas contracting, there's so many variables and it doesn't fall your way.
What about when it comes to shearing time now? You know, you are farmers, and it's the reality of the industry at the moment is there is a little bit of disconnect between shearers and farmers. What advice would you have to farmers, and what advice would you have to shearers, having been both?
Oh, wow, okay. Advice to shearers, well, it's the farmer's livelihood that you're dealing with, and it's, you know, just take more pride in your work. Yeah, and for farmers, probably there's a lot of infrastructure out there that probably isn't up to scratch, and this is their day-in, day-out job. So they may think, oh, look, they're only here for 3 days of the year. Well, guess what? the next shed thinks the same. So all I ever asked for was one thing to be improved annually. So if that was lights, you know, lighting wasn't good in the shed, you know, you fix the lighting. Or, you know, if the wool pack holders weren't up to scratch, let's get them fixed or get new ones of them. Yeah, it's just, you know, if you go in there guns blazing and you want a brand new shed, well, you're going to get pushback. So it's maybe a toilet or maybe, you know, a tap that's raised off the ground 300 mils so you can wash your hands properly and get a water bottle under it, you know. So it does work both ways, absolutely it does. You know, another one for the shearers is probably just the rubbish, you know. One of my pet hates is just all the, you know, the drink containers and the lolly wrappers and, you know, just clean up after yourselves. You know, you do it at home. So, yeah.
Yeah, Jess, over to you. So having been both, you know, working in Thames and now a farmer, what would you have advice for shearers and advice for farmers?
So for advice for shearers and shed staff is it takes some farmers, if they shear every 12 months, it takes 12 months to grow that product. And a lot of farmers that, you know, they take that time and that pride in presenting that sheep or that wool for it to be, you know, collected in its best possible way. So that they just respect the job that you're doing and what the farmer's presented to you. And then as far as farmers, I mean, conditions in the sheds can be at times pretty bad for staff. Sometimes the animals they present cannot be up to scratch as well, and it's not fair. Sometimes you wouldn't expect, if you don't expect to be doing that job or that shear that particular sheep, you know, why would you expect anyone else to? So, you know, it does work both ways. Like Luke said, if you present an animal that's in perfect condition and in well crutched, well presented, then you know, you expect the return.
I think that's great things there. Definitely, hopefully that'll have benefits to anyone that's listening. Now, I want to talk about staff, talk about how, you know, it is hard managing staff. How did you attract staff into your business and, like, what's your advice on maintaining them?
Attracting staff for us towards the end was probably, yeah, it was getting harder and harder for us. We weren't big on social media, and I think that's why a few of them are heading nowadays to recruit. We did rely heavily on local shearers and ones that were on the run. It's a hard one because you've got to understand that people use the industry to see the world in different places, even within Australia. You know, like your teams are constantly changing, and that's why it's hard getting the personnel right. And you might think going into the start of a season, start of a big spring, thinking, oh, you know, you beauty, you know, we've got a cracking lineup. And then you don't realise you're just going to have, you know, you're going to have two personalities and it clashes and it just falls to bits within the first 2 weeks. So you're maintaining staff, you just, you know, you rely on your communication and you know, pay after every shed and you just be quite punctual that way. And you just, you know, hopefully you can maintain them by doing the right things. You know, we were supplying our own shearing heads towards the end there and a van and, you know, so, you know, little things like that. We had quarters in town and little things like that. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's a revolving door, unfortunately.
What about you, Jess? You have anything you want to add?
I suppose a big part of our contracting business, I did the admin side of it. So I always tried to, yeah, like Luke said, be punctual with paying staff on time. Even if they needed, you know, prepayments, we allowed that at times just to help them out. It's trying to work with the staff that you got and like Luke said, their personalities, but also their needs sometimes. So, yeah, and just trying to provide them the best quality environment that they could be in or working.
Mm. I think you touched on it briefly there, Luke, about how cheering can take you anywhere. So not only around Australia, but around the world. Where has been the best place that it's taken you, the industry?
For me personally, Alexandra, New Zealand in the South Island. Yeah, I was lucky enough to make the WA team 2 years in a row a few years back, and that's just a beautiful part of the world. Yeah, we've been to Hay, New South Wales, been to Adelaide. Yeah, so.
What about you, Jess? Where's the favourite place that the industry's taken you?
Only done 2 state shows. I suppose Bendigo, Victoria, and New South Wales. Hay was a pretty good one, I think, because from what people were telling us at the time, it's generally dry and pretty barren, but they had quite a wet start or a wet season, and oh my god, grass and everything that they had going on was amazing to witness. Yeah, so Hay was pretty special.
No, it's awesome. Now, advice to someone who wants to start out, whether that's shearing or wool handling, what would you say to them?
Yeah, probably just have an open book with shearing. I mean, there's no right and wrong way, and there's certain things that I've picked up on lots of shearers, and they might be at different levels too. Like, it's amazing. I've shorn with guys that are doing a few less than me a run, but there's things that they do or blows that they do, or it might even the way they tie their shoelaces on their moccasins. It's amazing the little things you can pick up on, and just, yeah, be an open book. And it's, yeah, just always watching, always learning, always, yeah, there's always something to get better at.
How does someone become a shearer? What would be the first step you would tell them to take?
Buy a bag of cement. No, probably...
And particularly because Wayne Laird's retired inconveniently.
Yeah, look, there are novice shearing schools. Yeah, I'm an AWI trainer, so I annually do one locally at Ryington Park. So a lot of novices, and we see all types of people there, you know, 50-year-old plumbers and, you know, right through to 14-year-old kids, you know, who either been born and bred in the sheds and they just want to get going. And yeah, so that's probably the first place I'd, you know, and that's for both wool handling and shearing, and that'll give them a taste. And then if they want more, they can come back for another novice shearing school. And if it can progress from there into in-shed training, and then hopefully they can get a job.
Jess, what about you? What's your advice to someone starting out, and what would be your first step if they wanted to get into the sheds?
First step, like Luke said, there's shearing schools, and that includes wool handling training as well, local shearing teams and that. I'm sure that if you were interested in starting out in the industry, that just going out there in the shed and watching and learning and even helping out. Not my advice is, it's not easy at the start. I remember when I was starting out, there was some overwhelming days in the sheds, and you do feel like you can't go to work the next day, but it does get easier. It really does. So you just got to keep putting one foot in front of the other.
Now, I want to go back to the beginning, just touch on it. How you guys managed to start farming while also juggling this contracting business? Was it all at once, or what was the steps to get to where you are now? At what point did you say, okay, we got to sell the business, or, you know, like, how did we end up where you are now?
Acquiring the shearing run wasn't on the cards. It kind of just, yeah, it was the way it kind of had to go for that run to continue. So we didn't set out, you know, we wanted to be shearing contractors. That wasn't the case. It kind of just happened. And we were doing it, and that's why at the time we were cropping a fair bit more on our own farm. So I actually worked in quite well seasonally, you know, this time of the year going into seeding. You know, normally it's the quiet time. We'd normally wrap up our season in mid-March and we'd get going late July. So it used to work in well, you know, get all the spraying out of the way and then, yeah, just get back to work. And, I mean, we, you know, we were pushing the candle, really. We were farming on the weekends or any wet days, you know, we were dagging our sheep, and then you'll be shearing gym when we could. So it's, we don't really know any different. Yeah, I mean, they, yeah, the 38-hour week, I don't know what that is. We're probably almost doing that on weekends, to be honest.
Yeah, and what about you, Jess? And I also am interested in your perspective here as a mum, because amongst all of this, how did you be a mum?
Yeah, no, there were certainly days where it was really hard. I was in our team when I was pregnant, and then when I had newborns, obviously we had other staff to fill those positions. But, yeah, look, I tried to do as much as I possibly could on the farm for Luke when he was running the shearing business and I had kids in tow. Yeah, look, it was a juggling act, and I certainly don't miss trying to juggle both, especially as a mum, because as much as when your kids are little and they're not at school, it is a little bit easier to drag them along with you. But now they're at school and have extra activities, school activities and things like that, it's busier in another sense. So I'm certainly glad that we are not contract sharing thing with it as well. But also we've taken on a fair bit more like lease and cropping. So there was no way we could probably manage it all now if we still had the shearing business.
What value do they bring to your business? And was it always a thing you would have seen a lot of merinos around WA? Do you think your work as a shearer made you want to go back and invest in your own flock?
Oh, absolutely. Every day when you're shearing along, you're picking up on, and what the sheep are like, and then you ask what the genetics are and how they're being managed. So the timing of everything, when they lamb, when they crutch, when they shear. I mean, when they're shearing, obviously, but there's just little things you can pick up on. And I guess that's the beauty of genetics. You're never going to get a perfect sheep, but that's where you continue to keep working towards. And, I think our sheep are the best they've ever, we started with quite a motley mob of ewes, are all culls, and then you just, genetically go through them, over time. And, that's the beauty of shearing your own sheep. You see the faults in front of you unfolding, really, if they're there or not. And, we cull as we go. And, yeah, it's the only way, really. I think, yeah, our sheep are as good as they've ever been, but they're a long way off being perfect too. So that's the beauty of it. You're just continuing to get the perfect animal, which will, probably never achieve.
And yeah, what benefits do they bring to your business, even amongst all that chaos? You obviously still had your mob and you were working on that, so are they obviously still bringing, for those who are considering getting out of merino, what benefits have they brought to your business?
Oh, hugely, I guess. I mean, the last couple of years, I mean, they've been quite ordinary, to be honest, as far as pricing goes and stuff like that. But I mean, where we live in our area in the south of Boyack Brook, I mean, you can't crop 100%, you can't crop 80%, you're scratching to be able to crop 70%. So where, a lot of those areas are just a perfect for sheep, they've got a lot of shelter belts, and that's, that's where we run a lot of our sheep. So that's made those areas quite profitable, because if we, if we didn't have them, we'd be getting nothing out of those areas. So it's, yeah.
And the merinos are that dual purpose sheep. Like, I mean, as much as a lot of the shedders were a bit of a hot favourite there for a bit, like the merino sheep, you can't fault, but you still get something off their back. And like, if you're doing it properly and you're doing it well, I mean, it's well worth the exercise and producing that animal.
Just stay on you, Jess, because I want to ask you the same question. As a classer, were you the same when you were obviously looking at everyone's wool and going around? Yeah, and what tips and tricks did you pick up? Like, when are you guys lambing? When are you shearing? And obviously that made you want to invest back into your own merino flock.
Yeah, absolutely. So my biggest thing was just actually picking up on the wool types and the genetic where they buy them from, and yeah, just sometimes how they manage them, particularly summer sheds when there's higher VM, or farmers that have managed to keep the VM out of their wool. Yeah, just things like that. Definitely genetics and what studs they buy them from. So, yeah, I certainly love classing some sheds and not some others.
And, yeah, when are you guys lambing, shearing? How's obviously your workers working in sheds developed your business structure now?
Well, from the shearing run, we had to move our own shearing because it was that time of the year where it was everyone wants their sheep shorn, and that's when we were shearing our own sheep, which was September, October, and we've actually changed our summer autumn shearing, which is February now. We lamb late May. And yeah, so we actually shear our lambs in the spring though, and we keep them growing. So late October, early November before seed set, shear them. And then we actually shear them again in July, August, and then bring them back into line with the main shearing the following February. And that works really quite well because it keeps the young sheep growing, we find anyway. And there's probably something to that as well, as far as, you know, farmers need to understand that everyone wants to shear at the same time. And I think, you know, if it's spread out across the year a lot better, you'd get probably better quality shearers for one. And yeah, because then everyone's under the pump in certain times of the year, and that used to be very frustrating. And all you need to do is change your shearing by about a month, and all of a sudden you can probably, you know, name your team or where you, you know, and who does your shearing. And yeah, it'd be a lot different if a few farmers thought like that, I think.
Tell me, what's your why? Why are you guys in the industry, and why are you so committed to the wool industry?
I grew up with sheep and I absolutely loved them. I wanted to be a stud breeder. And I suppose that's just ingrained in me, I think, in my blood, in my makeup. And I see they share the same sort of love and an interest into the farm and into the sheep like we do. So oldest son Cohen is, yeah, amazes me how much he loves being in the sheds and even just wool handling the wool, and yeah, it makes you more proactive to keep going with what you're doing.
And you, Luke, what's your why?
It's probably all I know, to be honest, but it's also a thing. I think it's there's something about, I don't know, I just love the industry as far as, you know, shearing wool, sheep, yeah, that's all I really know. I'm passionate about, you know, it's, yeah, it's given me a lot of high highs as far as competing, and it's given me the same with growing sheep. And yeah, you know, you can always get better. And I think some industries you can't get that, or not that I know that, but you know, it's just, you can always improve and you can always get better. And it's, yeah, I don't know, in the bush, I wouldn't do anything different.
Amazing. Now, last question. What's your favourite thing about wool?
It's just Australian. It's just, I don't know, it's natural.
I love wearing it. It's a biodegradable product. It's not going to have a nasty effect on the world if it, you know, if someone leaves it behind, if you know what I mean. So it's a great product. It's universal. And yeah, I mean, we're just getting a new roof done, and I mean, most of our insulation in our roof is with wool products. So it's a pretty cool feeling to think, yeah, it's something that you grow is also something that keeps you warm. And yeah,
is it the merino, the sheep itself, or is it the wool products that you think you like more?
Probably the merino sheep. Yeah, for me. Yeah, look, but the products, you can't fault it. Yeah, so far in front of all the other alternatives out there. But yeah, probably the merino sheep itself, and you know how it goes about it, and yeah, both dual purpose. I think that's, yeah, probably my pick anyway.
No, great answer. Yeah, awesome hearing your story. And I think there's some elements of gold in there. As someone, you know, people who've worked both in sheds and now as farmers, I think there's some great advice and a great perspective. So, no, thank you for your time.
No worries. Thank you very much.
Thanks for that.
Thank you so much, Jess and Luke. The topics we cover in our webinars and podcasts are based on the feedback we receive in the AWI and TLC Partner Program survey. If you have something you want to hear about, let us know. The link is in our bio.